dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney, your host and guide for what I think of as an intelligence briefing on the war for the free world. A man who I've come to admire greatly for his acumen about that war for the free world, as well as his non-trivial contributions to it during his time in the senior ranks of the State Department under George W. Bush, is our guest, I'm very pleased to say, for a full hour. He is Christian Whiten. He served as special advisor to the Undersecretary of State for Global Affairs and then as a deputy special envoy. He was also active with Newt Gingrich in his campaign in 2012 as a senior campaign advisor. He is today a principal at DC International Advisory, LLC, and the author of a terrific book, Smart Power, Between Diplomacy and War. Christian Whiten, welcome. It's good to have you with us as always.
Good to be here. Thanks, Frank.
Thank you for giving us the chance to visit with you at some length about a whole host of issues that are very much on my mind and I think on yours. I'd like to start, I think, with the nature of the threat we are facing at the moment from, well, for want of a better term, let's call it the global jihad movement. We seem to be having a very difficult time, in the Obama administration at least, in coming to grips with the reality of that threat, or even naming it for that matter. What do you make of that? And more to the point, what do you think the implications of not getting that right are?
It's been fairly amazing as you've seen threats multiply across the Middle East, much of which goes back to this problem of failing to name our enemy, failing to understand our enemy. And they've come to a head so quickly. I mean, some of us warned about precipitous withdrawal from Iraq, that you'd throw the baby out with the bathwater, and that would cause problems. And certainly it has. It's fractured Iraq, probably permanently, and you have this war. But you have this problem with jihadism also creeping into the West, into places like Sydney and Ottawa and Copenhagen and Paris. It's just been stunning to see this failure to name our enemy, including most recently at the White House summit. You know, Obama said no religion is responsible for terrorism. People are responsible for terrorism. I mean, people, I think the average American, the average person around the world just looks at that and laughs when you consider just the obvious fact that radical Islam, Islamism, the political ideology of unifying mosque and state, is driving all of this problem. And you know, we have spokesmen out there saying things like, well, you can't kill our way out of this war. We need jobs. They want to look at the root causes. Well, fine, let's look at the root causes. But
jobs for
causes,
jihadists, to be
jobs for
specific.
Jihadists. And the root causes, and they won't look at the root cause, which is Islamism.
And this raises the question, insofar as we fail to diagnose the problem and its roots in Islam, and specifically this Islamic supremacist code they call Sharia, in your experience, Christian, and, you know, for that matter, your reading of history, is it possible, actually, to defeat such an adversary? It doesn't it have to begin with getting it right as to the nature of it and what, therefore, you can usefully do to counter it?
I think you do have to be honest with yourself. Just tell the truth. We didn't just complain in World War II about kamikazes and buzz bombs and blitzkrieg. There was something animating that, and it was fascism that animated Nazism, that animated our adversaries there. And similarly in the Cold War, it's not, we didn't sort of declare a desire to resist the Red Army or the KGB to the extent that they were present in Eastern Europe. That was a part of it, but we were smart enough to recognize there was something behind that, which is the Soviet government. And behind that, Marxism, Leninism. And if we're unable to say, I mean, really, when Obama described the attack on the Jewish deli in Paris as random, I mean, these aren't random acts. They're being, they may not be sort of Al-Qaeda-like, being directed by a single evil villain at the top, but they are part of an ideology. And we've done quite well at confronting those in the past, waging not just kinetic military war, but cultural war, economic economic war, political war against communism, against fascism. So if we get our head in the game, we can actually do well at this.
Yeah. As I think you know, Christian, one of the things that we've produced recently at the Center for Security Policy is a strategy, we call it the Secure Freedom Strategy, that is explicitly modeled after the one that President Reagan used successfully to defeat that last totalitarian enterprise that was seeking our destruction, an ideology that we knew as Soviet communism in the day. And it seems to me you're absolutely right that both clarity that we're up against a similar, not identical, but maybe communism with a god, if you will, kind of ideology, but that we have to use the same kinds of instruments, smart power, of course, among them, to try to take these guys down rather than let them take us down, which is very much what they seem to have in mind. Let me ask you about a man who it would seem to me is an extraordinary ally and asset in this fight, and yet one that the Obama administration seems determined not only not to support, but to help overthrow, namely President Abdel Fattah al-Sisi of Egypt. He has taken the bull by the proverbial horns in challenging not simply the Islamic State or al-Qaeda or even the Muslim Brotherhood, his arch foes at the moment, but the authorities of Islam at Al-Azhar University. Give us a sense, from your perspective, Christian Whiten, as to how important having such a guy on your team is and what it means that we don't seem to want him on ours.
Yeah, I think it goes to the key point, which is, as we discussed earlier, that we're at war with not just terrorist groups that are the tip of the spear, but an ideology that comprises the rest of the spear. And if you accept that, as al-Sisi did, because he lived this firsthand, you understand that the Muslim Brotherhood, for example, is not a good thing. That, in fact, they are the political body behind and share the same goals as groups like al-Qaeda and ISIS. They may have slightly different means and have disagreements over who gets to run things, but going after the intake of that organization, including the radicals at Al-Azhar, is crucial. And al-Sisi and his colleagues in the military were fundamental in dislodging the Muslim Brotherhood from power. You know, we still have this problem where we say, oh, well, gee, the Muslim Brotherhood won. They won an election. Well, okay, they won it 52-48 using a lot of intimidation and other tricks. And democracy is about a whole lot more than just elections. So, you know, we need to back off the happy talk about democracy, I think. And I was part of that at the State Department, the Democracy Motion part, and realized that the more important product is the political outcome. And we're much better with a military ruler like al-Sisi in a transitional period than we are with Islamists.
Well, that particularly, and I think this is an important caveat to what you just said, and I think you would agree, particularly to the extent that having elections really simply serves to bring in the absence of the other underpinnings of a democracy, people who will use it as a vehicle for authoritarian control. I mean, the Brotherhood is certainly all about that, as we did see in Egypt. And Christian, I guess the follow-on to this is, as you watch the administration giving the back of their hand, at best, to al-Sisi, what does that do to our enemies as they are thinking about whether to be our friend or our foe?
It gives, I think, solace to those who are either against us or willing to jump in bed with the Islamists. You have good people, I think, like General Haftar in Libya, who's fighting the Islamists and fighting, including the group that killed our ambassador, and he's getting no help. On the flip side of that, you have bad actors like Turkey's boss, Erdogan, and you have the government of Qatar that jumps in bed not only with the Muslim Brotherhood, but far worse groups, including terrorist groups. Who know that they can get away with it because, you know, we are sort of in this hazy mindset where we can't say, okay, not all Muslims are jihadists, but there's a problem with radicalism, there's a problem with Islamism, and that is how we are going to judge people. Incidentally, if we had that as our basis of judgment in the Middle East, it would sort of be a no-brainer that we would appreciate someone like Bibi Netanyahu, the Prime Minister of Israel, coming and talking about these threats. I mean, he is a figure like al-Sisi, like some of these other people, people who have stood against this, against the odds.
Well, and I want to talk about Bibi's upcoming speech and specifically the topic, namely Iran and the threat that that jihadist enterprise is going to be posing to us. If apparently the Obama administration has its way and does a deal that will essentially assure its nuclear capabilities of the very worst kind. We're not talking nuclear power here, folks. We'll talk about that and much more in the remaining three blocks of our program with Christian Whiten of DC International Advisory, LLC.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
Over the past decade, while the American military and intelligence community have been engaged in a kinetic war overseas against a wide array of enemies aligned with the global jihadist movement, the Center for Security Policy has consistently shed light upon a dark and subversive effort that thrives nearly unopposed right here in this country, the one known by the Muslim Brotherhood as Civilization Jihad. In an effort to educate freedom-loving Americans about Civilization Jihad and how it has been waged against every facet of American civilization, the Center for Security Policy has, in 2015, begun publishing a series of monographs called the Civilization Jihad Reader Series. The first of these monographs is entitled Sharia in American Courts, and it documents how Sharia, divine Islamic law, which animates the global jihadist movement, has entered our very own court system. In this study, the Center documents how parties to litigation in American appellate courts have attempted to use Sharia to resolve 146 cases in 32 different states, potentially threatening the constitutional rights of our citizens, particularly women and children. The monograph not only highlights these cases, but the organizations here in America that are actively and successfully working to insinuate Sharia into our judiciary. Finally, it provides information on at least one antidote to this infirmity, a law that has been adopted in 8 states, one that protects our citizens against the use of foreign law and upholds our Constitution as the supreme law of the land, lest those who fight to defend our Constitution overseas do not come home to see it subordinated in a courtroom in their own home state. Learn more by reading Sharia in American Courts, which can be found on Amazon.com or the Center for Security Policy's website at www.securefreedom.org.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the war of ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
Ready to roll?
Go for it.
Hi, I'm Jessie Jane Duff. I'm a retired United States Marine Corps Gunnery Sergeant, and I served 20 years on active duty serving this great country. I'm with Concerned Veterans for America now. After I got off active duty, I realized I still wanted to be involved and help change the direction our country is going. Concerned Veterans for America offered me that great opportunity. If you want to get involved, and you're thinking of getting involved, please visit our website because we have many activities throughout the nation. We have wonderful representatives in each state who are putting forward different ways you can become engaged. So go to the website at concernedveteransforamerica.org, and you do not have to be a veteran. But if you support the freedoms that we all fought so hard for to defend this great nation, then consider participating in the many activities we are participating in and helping to change the direction our country is going.
This is Frank Gaffney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
We're back. We're joined by Christian Whiten, a former senior State Department official under George W. Bush, now a principal at DC International Advisory LLC, and the author of Smart Power: Between Diplomacy and War. Christian, we were talking about the jihadist enterprise, the fact that it is a menace, the danger being compounded by our failure to understand how serious a threat it represents, and even its wellsprings in Sharia and Islam. A case in point, perhaps the most egregious case in point, of course, is the Islamic Republic of Iran. As a former senior State Department official, what do you make of how we're conducting our diplomacy vis-a-vis Iran's nuclear weapons program at the moment?
Well, Frank, it's very reminiscent of frankly, how we approached North Korea. When I was at the State Department, I was working on human rights. We were trying to push more factual information into North Korea, help refugees, things like that. But other parts of the department, with the backing of Condi Rice and Chris Hill, were trying to get the deal of the century. And, you know, so you had North Korea in 2005, and again in 2007, say they were going to give up their nuclear program. It was hailed as a breakthrough from Beijing to Washington around the world. And what happened? You had a nuclear test in 2006. You had another in 2009. You had another in 2013. It was just a despotic, deceptive regime buying time, pocketing goodies, and becoming a nuclear power. It just feels very reminiscent. We have diplomats in such a hurry to get to yes, and willing to give Iran several capabilities of enrichment and production within 10 years, and then they can do almost anything they want after 10 years. It seems like a recipe to a bomb.
Well, and if, as we have heard yesterday from one of the groups that has been actively exposing secretive nuclear capabilities in Iran for some time, the so-called MEK, there is a parallel program, or at least other aspects of the program that have not been revealed yet, then this makes even more of a mug's game of this deal that the president is likely to tout as the deal of the century as well. So it's very important, I think, to have your experience, Christian Whiten, and background in this brought to bear as a reminder that we have been had. And by the way, North Korea is joined at the hip with Iran, so you can bet the Iranians have learned from their experiences. Christian Whiten is our guest. We're talking about Iran, the bomb, what Obama is doing that will apparently enable the former to have the latter, and what that might mean for all of us. And Christian, as you were talking, I was thinking that the lessons of history, when unlearned, can prove so devastating. And that could be especially the case with the millennial regime of Iran and its visions of bringing on the return of the 12th Imam, the Mahdi. Talk a little bit about that as a context in which the mistakes that this president seems to be making in enabling them legitimately now to have basically an entire nuclear weapons cycle in place might mean for all of us, not just Israel, but all of us.
Well, I think that's a key point, that we often project our own values and beliefs and calculations on others to our detriment. And this administration in particular has thought that it can sort of define other countries' national interests using clever talking points, saying, for example, that Vladimir Putin is isolated and that Russia has never been more isolated, just to give you an example outside the Middle East. Vladimir Putin doesn't think that way. He doesn't care about clever talking points and slick speeches from the White House. He is going to calculate his interests independently, and even if that is detrimental, that's the way he's going to do it. I think the key point, if you look at Iran, is that we are failing to appreciate that millennial apocalyptic component that you mentioned, which is that Iran can't really be deterred. It's not just sufficient that to say if they nuke Tel Aviv that either Israel or the United States will respond by attacking Tehran. They are willing to trade one city for an Israeli city. They may be willing to trade 10 cities. So the traditional notions of nuclear gamesmanship that we have from the Cold War don't apply. And that's a big problem, because we are are using Cold War rules in working out this agreement, a flawed agreement that allows too many capabilities, and that will result. Also, it just, I think, speaks to the mindset. If you look at the way we're going through these negotiations, it's so weak, and it's not just apparent to the Iranians, it's also apparent to the Russians and the Chinese. The fact that the Iranian negotiator, who apparently can sit there and scream hour after hour at our negotiators, and they never just get up and walk away. I mean, any American who has purchased a used car knows if you're not willing to walk off that lot when the deal is bad, then you're going to get suckered. But it is just, I think, so apparent to the Iranian regime that they can get almost everything. This administration in the White House has flailed on every other thing and is desperate for some sort of icon that can hold up a success, an agreement that can say, well, we at least bought more time.
It's hard to imagine, really, a circumstance more dangerous than one in which you are enabling an outfit like the Iranian regime to treat you with contempt, knowing that they actually think your destruction is the path they are destined by God to tread. You don't want these people to be under any illusion that they will be stopped. And I'm afraid we're sending, as you've indicated, Christian White, and every other signal imaginable. Speaking of which, we will be getting a speech next week from Benjamin Netanyahu. You spoke of him earlier. A courageous man, leader of a sovereign and allied government, one of very few that I believe is authentically on our side, certainly in the Middle East. What do you expect him to say to the United States Congress, and what do you make of the spectacle of how he's been treated?
It's really, I wish I could say unprecedented, although this administration has a habit of influencing foreign elections. It's very interesting. They accuse their opponents, both domestically and abroad, of doing the exact thing that they have done. So we just have, quite recently, Susan Rice saying on the record, accusing Netanyahu of injecting a degree of partisanship into this issue, and saying, well, we can't host Netanyahu because it's too close to an election, and we don't want to influence political outcomes abroad. Well, first of all, that's incorrect. This administration has consistently tried to undermine Netanyahu. Unnamed officials saying on the record for the press that he is Aspergery, that he is chicken. It's also happened, incidentally, in Taiwan, where the administration de facto endorsed the KMT, the more pro-Beijing of Taiwan's two parties, to help it get reelected. So it's been remarkable that we wage political warfare against our allies, against the sort of chief defender of Western civilization, against radical Islam, and that we don't do it against Iran.
Just to put a fine point on that, and of course we're talking with the author of Smart Power, Between Diplomacy and War, what the administration has done beyond what you've already described, Christian, as you know, is they've actually sent political operatives into Israel for the purposes of trying to defeat Benjamin Netanyahu. I mean, this is the height of hypocrisy and worse, I think, malfeasance in terms of strategy. But it really, it sort of strains credulity that they could simultaneously be decrying John Boehner injecting, himself into the election by having Bibi Netanyahu make this appearance before the joint session of Congress, to say nothing of Bibi coming and talking to him. It's unfortunately now becoming something of a commonplace that we get this kind of behavior, especially as it relates to the Netanyahu government and Bibi Netanyahu personally. But sadly, I'm afraid it kind of bespeaks, as you indicated, the treatment of our allies more generally. It turns out, as you know, it's better to be an enemy of the United States than its friend. And that means you're going to have more enemies and fewer friends, I fear. Christian White is our guest for another two segments. We'll look forward to talking with him next about Russia and where Vladimir Putin is headed. Will we be helping him get there? Straight ahead.
Visit us at facebook.com/securefreedom with Frank Gaffney.
A America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Yesterday, the Center for Security Policy released a dossier showing that Representative Andre Carson, Democrat of Indiana, has long been personally associated with individuals and organizations tied to the Muslim Brotherhood. The government has established in court that the Brotherhood's mission is, quote, destroying Western civilization from within, unquote. Representative Carson is not just a member of Congress. He was recently appointed to the House Intelligence Committee. That's the panel responsible for overseeing the most sensitive of U.S. efforts to understand and counter all enemies, foreign and domestic. That this obvious security problem has so far gone unremarked and uncorrected underscores official Washington's dangerous failure to address appropriately the Muslim Brotherhood threat. Worse, it can only be seen by our enemies as further evidence of the inevitability of their victory. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Learn more at securefreedom.org.
There are many sounds in your daily life. Ones that make you smile. Ones that help you relax. And there are some sounds that can help save lives. Wireless emergency alerts, now on many mobile devices, use a unique sound and vibration to bring you critical information about emergencies in your area. With updates from local sources you know and trust, you can be in the know wherever you are. Learn more at ready.gov/alerts. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
When we decided to rename this radio station, we came up with one word, one very big word, Answer. It's because we know our listeners better than anybody. We know you wake up every day with an insatiable appetite for news and information. But more than that, you want to know what to make of it all. No matter what happens, if it matters to you and you listen long enough, you'll learn what it means and different ways to think about it. That's why we're here.
Do this better than any station in town.
Welcome aboard. AM 1260, The Answer.
Navigating this world when you are undereducated can be difficult. I'm Dr. Ben Carson, and I know this for a fact. When I was growing up, my family lived in dire poverty, and because of my poor learning skills, my classmates called me dummy. My life began to turn around when my mother encouraged me to read. I went from the bottom of my class to graduating from Yale University and becoming the youngest director of pediatric neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins Hospital. I know how important it is to nurture a child's dream.
When I grow up, I want to become a scientist.
I want to be a doctor, just like Ben Carson.
I hope to become an engineer.
I want to be a teacher or maybe a broadcaster.
The Carson Scholars Fund is impacting schools across the nation by encouraging children to read, write, and excel at math and science so they can realize their dreams. We need your help. To learn more about the Carson Scholars Fund and to donate, visit our website at carsonscholars.org.
After all, the person who has the most to do with your success is you.
This is Frank Affney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
Now more with Frank Affney.
Welcome back. We're talking with Christian Whiten, a very smart guy who has written the book, actually, on smart power, entitled Smart Power Between Diplomacy and War. He is drawn for it on his experiences in the senior ranks of the George W. Bush State Department. He is today a principal at D.C. International Advisory. You'll find him at Fox News and elsewhere, and periodically here, I'm very pleased to say. Christian, turning your gaze a little further afield, you've touched on this once or twice already, and certainly we've been discussing the dangers of emboldening enemies and allowing them to come to hold you in contempt. Discuss in that context, because it seems very apt, the current Obama standing with Vladimir Putin of Russia.
It's again another threat that was more theoretical, that was a maybe this will happen if we convey weakness, and it's really come to the fore with amazing speed. I mean, the notion that Russia would not only snatch Crimea, but would also, move well into other parts of Ukraine. It's truly amazing, and it really calls into question in a very dangerous way whether there is any use to NATO anymore. I mean, if you're one of the Baltic states, or if you're Poland, who's felt the brunt of so much history, you have to be somewhat terrified. I think we're actually somewhat fortunate that these countries have stuck it out and not started cutting deals or cozying up to Putin, which is another threat if we continue to show this weakness. But at any rate, you have an obvious Russian invasion into Ukraine. The fact that they take their insignia off fools no one. In fact, it's a war crime, removing their Geneva protections. And what are we doing? We're sending blankets and perhaps in some instances radios. We're not even providing desperately needed light weapons to the Ukrainians. So it is a signal to Putin that he can do almost anything. And yet we're talking about, well, gee, what's the worst case scenario? Maybe this would lead to something in the Baltics, Moldova, whatever. Who knows? It could lead to something very dangerous in Central Asia, which also is considered part, by Moscow of its sphere of influence. Perhaps a move into Turkey. If you've already gotten sort of, what you've long wanted, the Crimea in the Black Sea, how about what you've always wanted, which is Istanbul? I mean, these are theoreticals, but it's the potential for just a very dangerous Europe.
Let me ask, because it's rearing its head in a way that we haven't seen since, some of the darker moments in the Cold War. There is now, it appears, a growing concern that the march the Russians have stolen on us in terms of modernizing their strategic and tactical nuclear forces and beginning to deploy them, perhaps even some into Crimea, may mean that the kind of rhetoric that we've been hearing from Putin from time to time, threatening allies, threatening us for that matter, the kind of conduct that we've seen of, bombers with cruise missiles, in some cases exposed, flying close to or into air defense zones of our allies or our own. And does this suggest to you, Christian, based upon your experience as well as your study of these matters, that we may well be perilously close, far closer than anybody might imagine, to things getting wildly out of hand because of miscalculation or by Putin's design?
That's another fear I have had. I think that when George W. Bush left office, frankly, the chances of a major conflagration where literally hundreds of thousands or millions of people die before leaders even start talking and trying to calm things down, of essentially a general war, were very small. I don't think they're probable now, but if you've gone from perhaps 1% to 20% of major wars, the United States fighting on multiple fronts, not just with poorly organized terrorists, but with real militaries, whether it's Russia or China. Again, I don't think it's probable, but just the fact that these people are pushing on open doors, that they've seen little consequence, the consequences they have felt are frankly due to market corrections, if you will, the decrease in the price of oil, not due to any magical policy coming out of Brussels or Washington. It's a real risk, and we have this rhetoric. You have Obama and even people on the right like George Shultz who say, maybe it's the time to get rid of all nuclear weapons. And that is just horrendously naive. The world is going very much in the other direction, and we may look back in the decade after 9/11 not as a time of peril and war, but of a relatively peaceful time compared to what might be coming down the pike.
Yeah, and I guess that's really the key point that I was hoping you might speak to, and that is, whatever the percentage of probability is today, maybe it's 20%, maybe it's somewhat higher, maybe it's somewhat lower, but the trajectory, the trend, is very much in the wrong direction at the moment. I think you would agree.
I think so. And if you look at the cost, just the fact that, the military you need to fight jihadists is different than the heavily naval and air force base and nuclear base force you need to deter China and also Russia. I mean, if Russia were tame or if Europe had Russia pinned down to an extent, we could talk about moving forces to the Pacific, sort of the more high-tech stuff, and focusing the Army and Marine Corps on the growing jihad in the Middle East. But if China is really getting out of hand because they see there's no consequence to resisting. And you see some of that. If you look at the buildup in Japan, I think it's welcome, but some changes in the disposition there, changes in Australia, they are very concerned. And then if you look at Russia, where you have to be very concerned if you're Poland. And, you know, there are people in the United States who can say, well, this isn't so much our problem, and if allies are standing up more, then that's great. But never has, since World War One, since we've had the modern world, American leadership has just been indispensable in confronting these threats. And if we are not there, then eventually people will start cutting deals with bad actors in their region, which means it becomes much more dangerous for Americans traveling abroad, working abroad, our commerce, our way of life.
There is another possibility, I guess, too, and that is that you may see some states who choose not to, for whatever reason, nationalism or fear of the alternative, to acquire their own nuclear capabilities, to build up their militaries, and become, once again, as they were in the past, well, superpowers, I guess you might say, or certainly regional powers of the first order that may not be in our interest either. I'm thinking about Japan. Germany seems less likely at the moment. They can't seem to find the wherewithal to put proper weapons in the hands of their troops at the moment. They're using broomsticks, that we're being told, in some of their exercises, their NATO exercises, by the way. But Christian Wyden, I guess I'm interested in your thoughts as to, again, why the past practice that I revere of what we used to call peace through strength under President Reagan is still vastly preferable to the kinds of risks that we're running now. And I think most of us don't understand the degree to which we're running those risks. For example, the Heritage Foundation just today has published an index of U.S. military strength as kind of a baseline. I think it's a very useful exercise to evaluate, you know, where we are today and what future budgets and spending and so on, or lack thereof, will do to our military. But what's unmistakable is we have hollowed out the military, and that is being done, as you've so described so well, in a very dangerous time. Quickly, what are the implications of that kind of practice writ large?
Yeah, the Chinese, I think, know, and Moscow knows our carrier deployments better than we do and our naval deployments. They can also look at budgets and see what's going to happen. You know, this can actually be a nonpartisan issue because part of it is just broken procurement. It used to be an aircraft carrier only, quote-unquote, cost $4 billion. When the Gerald Ford is done, she will have cost $13 billion before you add the air wing, I believe. You know, we have the littoral combat ship, which can be defeated by a single attack helicopter. That's part of this magical pivot to Asia that's supposed to deter the Chinese. You know, you can screw up a lot of diplomacy and still be okay if you have a real military. This is something Senator Jim Talent has said a little more politely than I just did. I mean, that is the firewall. That is the last line of defense. And, you know, it has been systematically overstated how much in dollar terms the Iraq and Afghan wars cost. The marginal cost of those in the 10 years after 9/11 was about $1.3 trillion. That sounds like a lot, but the federal government spent $30 trillion on all purposes during that decade. So something we just have to do, we have to pay for. There are ancillary benefits to military spending.
Well, one way of thinking about it, I believe, is you pay for it the better way, which is upfront and in a manner that prevents war, or you pay the hard way, which is that you wind up having to wage war in a realm or coin of the realm that is vastly more dear to us, namely lives, as well as treasure. Christian Wyden is our guest for one more segment. We will talk about China and also, what about our own hemisphere? What is up there? Straight ahead.
Go to securefreedomradio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We will never fully understand what we've asked of our military service members, of their families, or their children, asking them to deploy, patrol, stay on watch, on point, asking them to put themselves in harm's way, to endure it all. But we do understand that it's our turn, our duty, to bring them all the way home, to keep them secure, to have their backs for the rest of their lives. Wounded Warrior Project long-term support programs do whatever it takes to help our most severely ill or injured veterans live independently, at no cost, for life, so that they might stand at ease. Find out how you can help at findwwp.org.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
I'm a firefighter.
A teacher.
I'm a farmer.
I'm a barber.
A waitress.
A mom.
We're all part of your community. Every day we move in and out of each other's busy lives.
It's easy to take for granted all the little moments that make up our everyday.
Some are good,
others not so much.
But that's life.
It's when you experience a moment of uncertainty.
Something or someone's behavior that doesn't seem quite right.
These are the moments to take a pause.
Because if something doesn't feel right, it's probably not.
It's not about paranoia.
Or being afraid.
It's about standing up and protecting our communities.
One detail at a time.
Because a lot of little details can become a pattern.
We trust our instincts.
Just like you should.
Because only you know what's not supposed to be in your everyday.
So protect your everyday.
If you see something suspicious, say something to local authorities.
Great news for fans of Secure Freedom Radio. Now you can watch original Frank Gaffney and Center for Security Policy video content every day from the comfort of your living room. What makes this possible? A new video streaming service called Roku. All you need is a Roku player and a television to join the millions of Americans who customize their home viewing experience using the more than 1,000 Roku channels to access movies, TV shows, music, and more. When you add the cost-free Secure Freedom Roku channel, you'll gain unlimited streaming access to vital video products of the Center, including Secure Freedom Radio, Capitol Hill and National Press Club events, intelligence briefings, Frank Gaffney's acclaimed 10-part Muslim Brotherhood in America course, and more. The Secure Freedom Roku channel integrates information and entertainment, establishing a new media battle space in the war for the free world. Go to securefreedom.org/ROKU today to learn how you can be a part of it. We hope you'll see us soon.
This is Jenny Thomas. I do video interviews of leaders with the Daily Caller. I had the privilege recently of interviewing Diana West about her extraordinary new book, American Betrayal, The Secret Assault on Our Nation's Character. You can see it at dailycaller.com. American Betrayal reads like a spellbinding historical thriller, but it is also a carefully documented account of how the U.S. government was penetrated by communist agents in the years after President Roosevelt normalized relations with the Soviet Union. Diana West shows how a similar assault is being mounted today by yet another collectivist ideology, the supremacist Islamic doctrine of Sharia. She establishes that while the communists and the Islamists may have very different visions of the world, they have employed the same techniques to defeat America. Please watch my conversation with Diana West about American Betrayal, then check out the other great leaders we profile at dailycaller.com.
America's injured and critically ill service members face incredible challenges every day of their lives. Since 2004, the Semper Fi Fund has helped thousands of service members and their families with both immediate and long-term needs. Join the Semper Fi Fund in supporting American heroes. They've given so much. Now it's our turn. Learn how your tax-deductible donation makes a real difference in their lives at SemperFiFund.org.
This is Frank Gaffney. You're listening to AM 1260, The Answer.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back, joined, as I'm very pleased to say, we have been for this full hour by Christian Whiten, a guy who has been thinking hard and practicing what he thinks about at the senior levels of the State Department under George W. Bush, the author of Smart Power Between Diplomacy and War. Today he is a principal at DC International Advisory, LLC. Christian, you have touched on this in some of your previous remarks, but I want to come back to it because I think there's clearly a dynamism at work at the moment with respect to China, its military buildup, its efforts to not only track, but also to essentially, well, deter our involvement in, our power projection of force into their area of the world, Western Pacific and East Asia. Give us a flavor of how you think the Chinese are viewing a window of opportunity. Do you think that this is tied in with some of the calculations that you've suggested enemies more broadly are making about the Obama administration and why that may make things even more dangerous than they would otherwise be with the Chinese?
I think there is a spillover effect. Weakness is provocative, and it's sort of provocative globally. You can't be so naive to think that a plastic reset button will change Putin's behavior, or that you can talk the Iranians out of their nuclear program and not impress, in a bad way, leaders in China. And in China, we face a new leader, newish leader, Xi, who is perhaps the strongest leader since Mao, or at least since Deng. You have an anti-corruption, quote-unquote, regimen taking place there. Part of that might be making things more efficient, but part of it is also just sweeping aside opponents, replacing the previous guy's patronage recipients with your own. It's just a very confident leader in a system that also is facing tremendous economic headwinds, that the growth model they have pursued has somewhat been exhausted. And they have, if you think we had a real estate bubble, they have a gargantuan real estate bubble that will have economic consequences when it pops. And that's really dangerous because often repressive regimes in particular like to turn to foreign adventures to distract from domestic problems. And you're seeing this with China pushing the envelope against all of its maritime neighbors, and also a land neighbor, India, with its sort of annual incursion into Indian territory. And it's very dangerous, and they haven't really felt the consequence. Obama has, announced first a pivot, or now it's called a rebalancing to Asia. But if you look, the forces really just aren't there. What we've sent, we've replaced very capable Aegis cruisers with what I mentioned earlier, the littoral combat ship, which I would just say is an expensive piece of junk. And it's very provocative. The Chinese are pushing on an open door. Luckily, you do have strong leaders. In Japan, you have Abe. In India, you have Modi. And they are taking matters into their own hands out of necessity. But again, when you don't have American leadership in these parts of the world, bad things tend to happen.
Yeah. Well, again, we touched on this earlier. I suggested that Germany may not be a candidate for this, but Japan certainly would be, at any moment, if they make the decision, a nuclear weapon state, if they felt that their vital security interests were no longer being secured under our so-called nuclear umbrella. And one of the reasons, as we've kind of alluded to in the course of our conversation, is in contrast to what the Russians are doing, in contrast to what the Chinese are doing, for that matter, the North Koreans and Iranians are doing, we're allowing our nuclear capabilities to atrophy. And I think every adversary on the planet, and our friends too, know that that's happening. So if you look at this as a matter, perhaps, of the absolute existential prospects for Japan, do you anticipate that they may, faced with a lack of American support, feel they have no choice but to take that momentous step, Christian Whitehead?
It's always a possibility. I think it's still fairly remote. One thing they have that Israel doesn't is a large number of U.S. forces present, a lot of Navy, a lot of Marines in Okinawa, some Army. And I think, the worry with Israel, that is, if you have a president with Obama and Iran nukes Israel, that he may not retaliate, at least not with nuclear weapons. Japan, I think, is fairly confident that the U.S. deterrence is real. And also, they do still have have that pacifist streak. Abe, the prime minister, has have to move very slowly and carefully in trying to normalize their military. So I would put the probability as fairly low. But, you know, it's sort of a situation like Europe in the 80s. If we want nuclear deterrence to be real, we can't just have politicians say, you know, well, we have this umbrella and trust us, we'll be there when the time comes. You actually have to have nuclear assets in the region, missiles on the ground or at least on ships and subs off the coast, preferably on the ground. And that, I think you may see South Korea and Japan thinking and asking different questions about that possibility, at least before they go fully nuclear.
Well, that's an interesting question. I don't see any prospect of that, as our president seems determined to rid the world of nuclear weapons, as you say, starting with ours. And the atrophying, as I say, of these forces may make any further deployments of them even more problematic. Christian, let me turn finally, and again, I'm thrilled that we've had this opportunity to talk with you about so many different aspects of the challenges that we're facing, but I'd like to turn to closer to home. We have witnessed in recent years the Russians, the Chinese, the Iranians, even the North Koreans, making inroads into our own hemisphere. Talk a bit, if you would, about the degree to which the old Monroe Doctrine has now been irreversibly shredded, apparently. We're no longer objecting at all, as best I can tell, to these kinds of insinuations, not just of economic interests and so on, but actually forces, or at least intelligence assets and terrorist proxies and the like. And what that portends, especially in a circumstance we find ourselves now where apparently our border is going to remain insecure, our defenses facing south are de minimis, if any at all.
Yeah, it's important that you know, this is not just a theoretical threat. There was, and I believe it was in 2010, the instance of Iranians from the Quds Force, or with links to it, in touch with people they thought were Mexican drug cartel operatives, arranging mass assassinations in Washington, D.C., including the Saudi ambassador, but prospectively including anyone else who got in the way, and I believe that included potentially U.S. senators. It's not just a theoretical threat that these threats from farther abroad would take advantage of chaos in the Americas and on our southern border. And you've seen liberals respond almost with scorn to the idea that that porous border could be exploited by terrorists who don't want to, you know, bother with clearing customs at JFK or Dulles. But it's quite real. And if you talk to southern governors in particular, border state governors and sheriffs, they see, you know, very alarming signs. You've heard anecdotal evidence of Korans and other religious material that's not consistent with the general population of Mexico or Central America that have been found on our side of the border. And it just makes sense if you have this porous border that terrorists would someday try to leverage that.
Well, unfortunately, it's partly the porousness of the border, and it's partly that we've got this magnet that is drawing people here, bringing, of course, large numbers that serve as perfect concealment for, you know, some who may wish to do us harm, not seek economic opportunity. And again, I have to say, this is so painful as we speak, witnessing the United States Senate new Republican majority apparently take a dive on the steps needed to prevent President Obama from continuing the operation and maybe even intensifying the magnetism, that magnet, if I can use that expression. Christian, we've run through a full hour of our time with you and done so, I think, with great benefit to those of us who are interested in your views and in understanding the challenges that are facing our country. We appreciate very much the time today, and I look forward to visiting with you again in the near future. In the meantime, I appreciate so much what you do for all of us at Fox News and the DC Advisory LLC. Keep it up and come back to us again very soon. We hope the rest of you will come back to us again tomorrow. Same time, same station. Until then, this is Frank Gaffney. Thanks for listening.
From the nation's capital, you've been listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.